Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we preview the PGA Championship with Valhalla caddy Kyle Greenwald and introduce you to Grammy Award-winning musician Jason Mingledore. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along this hour. We wanted to talk about some PGA Championship. We'll do some music later on in the show, but we know that Valhalla is the site of this year's PGA Championship. And of course, we would have somebody on the ground who knows it so well. Now, backstory on that is we won't be at the PGA Championship. We'll likely be at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. But the guy that caddied for us by chance at Avenel during one said media day has stayed in touch with us for better or worse for Kyle, and he's joining us on the show. So please welcome Kyle Greenwald. Kyle has been on the show before, just for the record, but welcome back, Kyle. Great to talk to you as always, my man.
Good to be here.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I know in doing our research and finding out things, I mean, you have been over to Valhalla, and you have taken some good notes, and being the caddy that you are, and he's a player as well, but he's, you know, a pretty darn good caddy. We've experienced that firsthand, and you know, when you're out there with a bunch of media types hitting the ball all over the place, and I'm not just talking about yours, truly, you know, it gets to be a crazy day, but you are a guy that has great respect for the game. You keep a very positive attitude no matter where you have to find the balls, in the woods or in the deep grass or any place in the, except the fairway and on the green. So, you know, not everybody can do that. And besides, even though we didn't carry our bags, guys that caddy carry 50-plus pound bags around, and I don't even do that for myself. So I commend you guys all the time.
I appreciate that.
So tell us a little bit. As we get ready for the PGA Championship coming up really, really soon, what does Valhalla look like? We know PGA of America is going to do the utmost to make that course pristine and fair, but you know, tough on the golfers who play in the PGA Championship.
So since it was there the last – well, since any event was there, which I guess the last event was 2014, that's the year Rory won – coincidentally, the year I started caddying there, so 10 years I've been there. They, 2 years ago, took out every blade of grass in the fairways, and they replaced it with Xeon Zoysius. It's the same surface that they pros play on at, the Atlantic,
The Tour Championship?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, the big one. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the same grass, so they'll be used to playing on it, and it is as close to carpet as you could ever imagine. It is perfect, absolutely perfect.
So is this what you have in your front yard or your backyard at your house?
No, actually, in my backyard, I have artificial turf, but I just put that in.
the best turf on the planet, however.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just put artificial turf in. I got three big, humongous dogs that like to dig holes, so I eliminated that.
Oh, yeah. No, just see, they're getting the bunkering going in the backyard. Come on.
Right.
Come on, Kyle. Think,
right.
Yeah, be a forward thinker like I know you are.
So I was just out there about 2 weeks ago caddying. They had some limited play for the members, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely stunning. They put a ton of work into that golf course to get it ready. The bluegrass rough, we have bluegrass here in Louisville, and this time of year when it's rain and sun, in the springtime here in Louisville is always beautiful. That rough is going to be a factor, I promise you.
So the rough has been cut back for U.S. Opens. It used to be quite penal, and then they trimmed it back. So it's a first cut and then a second cut. If you're unfortunate enough to get into that stuff, it gets deeper. But does Valhalla seem to be set up similar to that?
Well, they'll have the first cut, which is usually about a yard wide off the fairway. Of course, that's standard everywhere. But then the bluegrass rough, it'll be, I can't speak for the guys that are going to set the golf course up, but if they let it grow to 6 inches or so, it'll be a chip out situation. It's incredibly thick and lush right now and heavy. And if they miss the fairways, it's going to be penal. And then, of course, further on, if you go further off the fairway, you got heather. So that's, 2.5 foot grass that nobody can play out of.
Well, so those that are a little less familiar with Valhalla, it is in Louisville, Kentucky.
It is.
And what is weather like for those who have never been to Louisville, Kentucky in May? What is weather like?
Well, you can have a whole lot of things. So today is sunny and about 75 degrees. I mean, it would be perfect playing conditions today. But Derby was last week, and the Kentucky Derby is always the first Saturday in May. And I have been in the infield on some of those occasions where it's actually snowed. So you can get it runs the whole gamut. I've looked at the forecast for next week, and it's 30% chance of rain. I mean, they can't tell that far out anyway, but it looks like the temperature wise it'll be 70-ish.
So not bad, but what about the humidity?
It's not bad in the spring. In the summer it's certainly humid. The Ohio Valley certainly gets pretty stifling, but in May, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. I mean, it's humid this week because we've had a lot of rain, but yeah, it's pleasant.
That's good. Obviously, the PGA Championship did get moved for a while to August, so I would think that May in Kentucky is better than August in Kentucky.
Oh my gosh, August can be brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yeah, the risk of moving it to May, as far as moving the PGA and having it in Louisville in May, is you can have a lot of rain or you can have chilly weather. It's kind of a crapshoot. You really just don't know. It's like I said, it's beautiful today.
So when you're caddying for someone, whether it's a professional player or a recreational player or maybe a top amateur, do you caddy differently for each of them?
Yes. I don't get a whole lot of top amateurs. So it's a club. We get guests and member play. And I guess if I've caddied, I did 100 loops last year and probably 10 to 15 broke 80. The large majority of players that I caddy for are not very good.
Okay, that's members included. Yes. We won't mention any particular names. But
not a single name. You do caddy different. And I figure that all out on the practice tee. So it's a matter of seeing how they hit the ball on the practice tee. What side of the fairway am I going to park on to best be positioned to retrieve their golf balls or give them yardages or whatnot. For the guys that I know they're going to hit fairways and need exact yardages, then we can do that. But a lot of times the guys are out there just for the experience and just to have fun, and that's perfectly all right too.
So do you forecaddy for the members and their guests as well?
Yeah, my split was about 50-50 last year. I carried bags half the time and forecaddied half the time.
Oh, so you didn't have to split it. It's designated. This is what you're going to forecaddy for this foursome for today.
Yeah, the players choose what they want in the clubhouse. They say, I want a walking caddy, or they say, I want a forecaddy for all four of us, or I want a forecaddy for each cart. It's kind of all depends on what the players' preferences are.
Well, I would think, as we're talking to Kyle Greenwood, renowned caddy, actually national and international caddy, but mostly based out of Valhalla, not a bad place to be based out of, as he and I were talking when we were fortunate to have him as our caddy / four caddy. He had to do both that day, and he never saw us on the driving range, so he didn't know what he was walking into. There were groups that are way worse than the foursome that I was in. So it was, probably not as good as some others, but, it's really, as you said the word, crapshoot. So, or the term. So you get those.
At the end of the day, all caddies will tell you, they just want you happy on 18 green. That's the only goal.
And okay, so as a caddy, how do you accomplish that?
Well, in a lot of times at Valhalla, especially because it's a bucket list type of golf course, so we get a lot of guests that, oh, you know, I've waited forever to play this golf course. What we have to do to make their experiences better is to temper their expectations. So a lot of times, without being trying to be as tactful as I can, I'll say, look, you're not going to shoot what you shoot at your home course. It's not going to happen. So enjoy the golf course, enjoy the view, enjoy the good shots you hit, and just enjoy the walk.
Well, that's what happens. And I know you've been over at Congressional and some other very historic courses. You know, just because you can afford to join a course or be at a member at a club doesn't mean that course is going to be forgiving for you, no matter how much you want it to be.
Yeah, a lot of times us caddies will be out shaking our heads in the fairway going, this course is way too hard for my player.
Yeah, so what do you do? You just say, I'm going to have to work extra hard on this round?
It's managing personalities more than it's managing golf. You know, some people want you to talk a lot. Some people don't want you to talk at all. Some people want you to give them lessons on the golf course. Some people just want encouragement. Some people just want to know what club to hit. And you kind of figure that out pretty early on. And like I said, I've been doing it for 10 years. It's pretty easy. You know, by the second tee box, I pretty much got my player down pat, so I'll know what the day is going to be.
Well, 10 years at any club is a pretty decent longevity, so you must be doing something right, Kyle.
Well, you would hope, yeah. You would hope.
So do you suggest the people that play golf go out, and I'm not saying tote somebody's bag around, but do you suggest that they look at the game from the other side to have better perspective?
From other side being from our side?
Yes,
the caddy?
From the caddy side, correct.
I don't know that I'd suggest it. I would think that, yeah, that's probably – it does give you some perspective. It's given me perspective for sure. You get people that complain at every job, and you get some caddies that complain. That's like, look, dude, you're getting to walk this beautiful golf course and watch people hit bad golf shots, and you haven't hit one bad all day long.
Well, it's true. Again, we mentioned the word perspective, but that's the people that belong to the club belong. They've chosen that club to be their
right.
their club, and some do belong to multiple clubs, but there's always is a main club that they play out of. So no matter how many times you go out there, it's going to be challenging every time when you're at a club like Valhalla.
Yeah, it's honestly. The members are all, yeah, they get it. They know what they're in for. It'll be interesting to me. Speaking of perspective, so my fear of this tournament being held at Valhalla, as gorgeous as it is, as tough as it is, I hope these guys don't eat it up. I think they hit it so far that, I don't want to see 25 or 30 under win this golf tournament. And that's why I think they have to grow that rough up so that it's extremely important to hit fairways.
Well, that's a lot of what the USGA has historically done. Now, Mike Davis is no longer with the organization, and he was setting up courses on a regular basis. I think he still does do some consulting and such. But that's what their approach for the U.S. Open,
right.
It's relative to par. You will not see somebody go really low and sometimes not very low to win the major called the U.S. Open. And the PGA Championship put on by the PGA of America does try to make things fair because these are the members of the PGA of America that are playing. And on top of that, but they want it to be challenging, and no organization wants to see their golf course taken advantage of. With Kyle Greenwald heading to a break, back for more.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
And we are back with renowned caddy Kyle Greenwald, who is based out of Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky, the site of the upcoming PGA Championship, getting some boots on the ground. Yes, he's looped so many times and already. So we're almost halfway through the year. How many loops have you gotten in thus far in 24?
Well, very few, too, at Valhalla, because the course has been closed since November.
So they shut it down completely. Yeah, so when you got out to play or to caddy for the players recently, that was the first time a lot of people had set foot on the grounds to play.
Yep, it had been closed. They opened it up for a very limited field member opening day event. I think it was probably just to give the members an opportunity to see the course with all the setup, with all the stands and the tents and whatnot. That's my guess. Like I said, it was a limited field. We played Saturday and Sunday. It's been closed. So I've done two loops there, but I did go to Tiburon and caddy in the Chubb Classic down in Naples about a month or two ago.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to ask what you did in the meantime, but that's it's important to get the members a chance to see the course. That was well done, I have to say, because they go months and months and months without having access to their course. And I know some members over at Congressional personally, and the vote as to whether to have a big tournament return or not was very, very close. It was decided that they would have a tournament, but it was like 51-49. It was that close, because a lot of members want access to the course. I'm paying for this course. Yeah, I'm still charging me dues. I want to get out and play this course that I'm a member of.
Right. Yep, I agree. The good thing going for a lot of the membership, and I don't know what percentage, but there's a lot of the membership at Valhalla that are, as you say, dual members or even multiple members of different clubs. So it's not quite the inconvenience that it could be, but still an inconvenience for sure.
Well, you make the Louisville area your home. So what made it appealing for you to end up there?
In Louisville?
Yeah.
Born and raised, went away to school. I tell this story all the time, and it's absolutely true. When I was about to graduate from school and get my degree, the plan was from the day I stepped foot on campus that when I graduated, I was going to Florida. I do not like winter. I don't like any part of it. I don't like snow. I don't like cold. I don't like any of it. So I was going to move to Florida as soon as I graduated. Well, as the old story goes, I met this girl, and she went to the University of Louisville from Michigan, and she said, I don't want to move further away from my family. So this was a compromise. So we just stayed here.
Well, okay. So that's not a bad thing. I mean, you can get to Florida. That's the nice thing. You don't have to move to Florida. You can go there. I have a neighbor that goes to Florida for like 5 months now. Was 3.5, then it became 4 last year, and then this year it was like 5, and it's just
that's the dream.
Yeah, she seems very happy. She only came back I think yesterday. I mean, so it's been gone for a while. There was a wedding in between in Mobile, Alabama. You want some humidity? Yeah, Mobile is probably one of the places to go from there. But
there's humidity. Louisville is a great place. So it's been described, and I agree with it. It's a big little town. It's not the big city that New York or Chicago or L.A. or those cities are, but it's not the small town either. It's just kind of a big. It's a mix of both, and it's got everything you would need except necessarily professional sports. And it's, the climate's good. The winter's not too terrible. But any flake of snow is bad in my book.
Wait, you have professional sports. You have University of Louisville basketball. Aren't there a bunch of pros playing? I swear.
They used to be. They haven't been very good for a while. We're hoping something changes here shortly.
Yeah, it's called the portal for better or worse.
Yes, right.
On that. Well, it's been great to catch up with you. Next time that you come on the show, which will be probably sometime after the PGA Championship, so you can give us your thoughts on that. But and the weeks ahead and stuff, we want to talk to you about the golf ball rollback and some other issues that even caddies have to deal with. But Kyle, it's been great to have you on. Spend some more time with one of our favorite caddies on the planet, Kyle Greenwald, based out of Valhalla, the site of this year's PGA Championship. But we're going to head to the bottom of the hour. Got a new musician to introduce you to. Well, he's been around for a while, but we'll talk with Jason on the other side of this break. But special thanks to Kyle Greenwald, and get out there and be kind to your caddy. We'll be back after this break.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
Welcome back to start the second half hour of the show. Now introducing you to somebody that we saw on stage in New Orleans. Now, as I told you last week, we're heading to New Orleans. Actually, we had to go to a wedding in Mobile, Alabama, and the airline that I usually fly doesn't fly out of Mobile, in or out. So we drove down to New Orleans, which is an interesting city unto itself. And of course, I did that because the guys at the sports TV network that I work for said, hey, as long as you're going to be in that area, why don't you drive down to New Orleans and do a little scouting for the Super Bowl that's coming up in January. Okay, let me do some advance work. Let me do that. So I tell a friend of mine, big music guy all over the place, who didn't get a chance to get down to Jazz Fest, usually goes, but his mom passed, and so he didn't end up going. But another one of his buddies went. And they say, okay, one of my favorite bands is playing at Tipitina's. Well, Tipitina's is a great small venue, a little club, if you will, on the uptown part of New Orleans. So we go there, and I watch this really good opening band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. They opened, they blew the doors off. It was pretty good. Then Papa Grows Funk, who is the band that my buddy Lee said, you got to go see. That's my favorite band. Well, I'm like, they haven't been together for like a long time. And Lee says, no, they're playing. This is great. This is the end of Jazz Fest a day later, and you really want to see this group. So they come on stage, and this guy introduces all the players, and there's a saxophonist. And you got anybody listening to this show knows that's my instrument, so I'm partial to those guys. But he introduces the guy as Big Wind. And I'm like, wait, what are we in store for? Well, anyway, 2.5 hours later, these guys finally wrap up straight, no breaks. And it was insane because my guest for this segment of the show, he was very sought after during Jazz Fest, and the groups all end up playing in these small clubs. This is all information I'm learning along the way there. Well, the guy's name is Big Wind's real name is Jason Mingledorf. And I had to get him on the show. He doesn't really have time, apparently, to play golf because not only does he have a couple horns that he blows all the time, he teaches. He's a professor at Loyola down in New Orleans. He has 3 kids. I mean, like, I don't know. Anyway, I'll let Jason tell the rest of the stories. We welcome Jason Mingledorf to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I really appreciate you coming on. I know it was a spur-of-the-moment thing, but I like had to reach out. Who is this guy? And then we start doing the research on you, Jason. And it's like, you know, I hope everything I read on the internet is true because it's on your site. But amazing, just everything amazing. And congratulations. And thanks for thinking enough to come on this show.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's funny you mentioned golf because one of my kids, his birthday was during Jazz Fest. I was so busy. And the one thing he wants to do, he's never played a game of golf. I took him to a driving range before Jazz Fest, so I promised him we'd go play around. So, and for his first time, so that's one of the first things on my agenda now that Jazz Fest is over.
Well, I'm surprised you have any strength left at all, but good for you, and good for your son to take up the game. It's a great game, and it builds character, does a lot of things, and we're always excited when the youth get involved because. With COVID, it was really bad for musicians, but it ended up being really good for golf. And not professionally speaking, because that's a hot mess going on over there. We can talk about LIV and PGA Tour anytime during our little conversation that you want to. But it's really good for families getting out there. And the youngsters are getting out there, and the mothers are getting out there, and the families are playing together and such. And, you know, down in New Orleans, you know it much better than me, but that whole town is like a little family atmosphere.
It really is. It's. I'm reminded all the time of how much of a small town it really is. Especially people who grew up here. They all, you know, they'll ask you if you're from New Orleans, you know, what school did you go to? Meaning what high school you went to? And people know each other from just growing up together because it's really not that big of a city.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know a couple people that actually bought houses down there and they live down there, but they don't talk about their college education. They, because apparently, you know, that's a stigma or something, because I guess it's just that kind of unassuming town.
Yeah, I guess it is weird how people are identified. They're from here. They're identified by the schools, the high schools they went to. It tells a lot about, like, maybe their background or where their neighborhood. As far as college, yeah, I guess people don't talk about it. One of the funniest jokes I ever heard from a wonderful trumpet player in town who runs Preservation Hall, Wendell Brunius, and he told me this. I saw him one night. I was finished doing a concert with a college group, and he goes, you know, there's one thing, only one thing kept me from getting my college degree in music. I'm like, what is that? He goes, a high school degree.
Yeah, that might be a problem. Might be a little problem.
Yeah. That's all. But it is a small town, and I'm always amazed at how many times I run into the same people and musicians all over.
So, but the key for you is you moved to New Orleans because you're not originally from New Orleans, are you? I thought you were from Alabama.
I am from Alabama, okay. Yes. And I've been here 35 years. But the fact that I did not go to high school here is one of those factors that I'll never be a true local, even though I've been here for, 30 years I've been here.
Yeah, because you barely look 35. So, you know, do you move when you were really, really young?
I moved when I was 20. I guess I'm in my 50s now. So, early 20s.
You're in your 50s. I need to start playing my horn more because you don't look like you're in your 50s. So this is good.
Well, I do what I love, you know. So I think that keeps me, you know, I hope it keeps me feeling young at least.
Yeah. Talking to Jason Middledorf, if you're not familiar with him, you should be. He does have a new album out. He called it an album, yeah. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. But playing with a group that we saw, Papa Grows Funk. Now but it broke up. I thought it was about 10 years ago that the group, for whatever reason, disbanded.
We did. We broke up. We were together for about 12 or 13 years, and we broke up in 2013. And they actually made a documentary on the band and the breakup, which is a really good actually look at the music scene in New Orleans and what it's like being a New Orleans band. It's called Do You Want It? But we broke up and I think this is our fourth time we've gotten together for a reunion show.
Wow. That was why my friend Lee was so jacked, because you guys don't usually play together, so that makes total sense. But Jazz Fest, I mean, the Rolling Stones are the headliners. I mean, but that's not where the action is. And I'm going to give some secrets here, because it's the clubs afterwards where everybody gets together.
Right. I mean, Jazz Fest is great. There's nothing like it. And but at night throughout the week. So for those that don't know, Jazz Fest is always the last weekend in April and the first weekend in May. And now it's back to four days each weekend, Thursday through Sunday. But those nights, all the clubs, and the days in between, there's festivals all day, all night. And when I say all night, like I had three gigs over this that started after 1 a.m. Like that was the beginning of them. And a lot of the clubs will have about four acts, throughout the course of the night. Now, New Orleans has a high percentage of live music for a city. It's probably the highest for a city its size. There's always music going. Any night of the week, there's 40, 50 clubs with music, which is not normal, even for like a big city like New York. And during Jazz Fest, it's just crazy the amount of music. Like, they have a local radio station, WWOZ. It tells you what music is going on that day. And during Jazz Fest, they do it every half hour. It takes so long. I mean, it's like, you know, 10 minutes, you know, to go through the list.
I would tell you, I think I lived through part of that. I was on a way, I got a ride back to the hotel, stayed at the beautiful Virgin Hotel. Sir Richard Branson done a fantastic job with that. And on the way,
I'm
hearing
New Year's Eve there.
Yo, I believe it. Yeah. I didn't get the chance to see that part of the club. But what a fantastic location and fantastic. Everybody was just, Cody's the general manager, just fantastic the way they take care of people, including yours truly. But I'm riding back, and the guy's got the radio on, and this young lady's voice comes on, and she's telling, you know, at the Black Cat, this, and she just kept going and going. So I think, I think I lived what you were just talking about. Thank goodness I was not in the vehicle for 30 minutes to hear all that. But that's just, I mean, it was insane, and that goes on all the time. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah, it's especially crazy during jazz. And so I have friends that are doing 30 gigs over the course of the 2 weekends, you know, 30, even more, you know, three to four gigs a day.
Are you guys getting paid for all the gigs?
Oh yes, definitely. This, and summer is traditionally a slow period for New Orleans. So this is kind of our winter. We save up for winter. We kind of make as much as we can during Jazz Fest. We also have French Quarter Fest like 2 weeks before Jazz Fest. So we kind of think of this as a festival season, and we just work like crazy. Because you never know what's going to happen in the summer.
Yeah. So let's go back. Yeah. Let's go back a little bit further. And I don't mean to be intentionally painful to a musician as we're talking to renowned saxophonist Jason Mingledorf on Tito Keith Jones. COVID hits and all my music buddies can't work. The venues are closed and everything else. So, I mean, talk about turning a music city upside down on its head.
Yeah, it was rough. It was really rough. But I tell you, we have a thing that's unique in New Orleans. We have this brass band culture, which it's very strong. There's probably a couple of dozen brass bands which have, it's kind of like a marching band, but
yeah,
so they can play outside. In fact, that's where they normally play, is outside. And I have a brass band that I've been in for since I moved in. It's over like for about 25 years. The New Orleans Nightcrawlers, and we happened to put an album out right before COVID, and then we had a hard time getting together to play because we all played in different bands and stuff. And when COVID happened, we had no gig. We weren't gigging any, but we were all suddenly available to play with each other, which was really kind of neat. And so this is a band that went from, for the last 10 years, playing a couple times a year, which was we could really only time we could get together, to playing pretty regularly. And then on top of that, we actually won a Grammy for that record, which really came out of the blue. So then we were able to work a lot. And that was kind of a neat thing that happened for us. We could just play on people's porches and do outdoor concerts. And we were available because all our gigs were gone. And we kind of, in a way, kind of got back together as a band playing kind of regularly.
So where does your gramophone sit? What shelf? What room?
Oh, it sits above our bed. My wife had me install this shelf that's like a floating shelf.
Uh-huh.
And it's big and heavy. And I was like, this is not a good idea. I'm never good at putting shelves in. They always seem to, you know, I never can find the studs good enough. I'm like, this is going to be some type of terrible karmic thing that I get, you know, killed with a shelf by my Grammy. So I, after a couple of weeks, I reinforced it with a bunch of other rods underneath it. Yeah, so it's very sturdy. It's right above our bed.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, nothing like getting hit in the head with a shelf when you're in your own bed.
That would be worse.
That would be so bad. All right, so congratulations on that success.
Oh, thanks.
But you go about and you've got all these different groups that you play with, but oh, by the way, he's like a professor of saxophone at Loyola, which is a unbelievable. Drove by that between Loyola and Tulane. You sit there with your, you never get your chin off the floor just out of the beauty that you drive by.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful campus. Loyola is a Jesuit college, so they've got these beautiful cloisters around next to the cathedral church there, and so it's very nice walking around the campus there.
So how do you have time to do that? I mean, you're teaching a pretty obviously. I mean, summer's coming up, so you'll be a little bit. You got nothing going on in summer. This is bad. This is really bad business planning on your part.
Well, I've never been good at that. Yeah. I started teaching there after Katrina, and around that time I had our first kid, and so I had to kind of put it into my musician hours, which are usually up till 4 a.m, you know, and then waking up around noon or 1 p.m. I started having to get up early, and so it kind of worked out really well. I take my kids to school, and then I go to Loyola, and I have a great office. I can practice, and I teach my lessons, and my students inspire me. I never get bored of – I never have a want for what to practice, because I'm always trying to stay a step ahead of my students. And I teach a couple of ensembles there. I'm adjunct, so I don't have to do all the faculty meetings and all that kind of stuff. But I don't get paid like them. But that, you know, it allows me freedom to gig when I, you know, do the gigs I want to do. And when I'm done teaching, I pick up my kids and take them home. So it kind of works out really well for me right now.
All right. I got to think that with all the gigging you're doing, that probably exceeds the money you would make as a professor anyway.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, so, yeah. So, most of my income is from playing.
Yeah, if you ever seen this guy, I got to tell you about his new album, his debut album. He does call it an album on his website. It's called Start It, Jason Mingledorf. Yes, that's with two Fs for those who are playing along at home. But fantastic. If it's anything like I saw, people will be, no pun intended, blown away. This Papa Gros Funk group played for 2.5 straight hours. I think Springsteen only plays for like 3 and maybe takes a little break in there. You guys were going, no, Jason wasn't blowing the horn all the time, but he was blowing it a lot, and he was blowing it through the roof. It was crazy. We're with renowned saxophonist, Grammy Award winning saxophonist, Jason Mingledorf. Heading to our final break. We'll be back. are back for our final segment. And as many renowned saxophonists as I've had on this show over the years, whether it's Rich Cannata, who played with Billy Joel for a lot of years, or Phil Woods, who actually is more famous for his solo on Just the Way You Are with Billy than he is for most of his others, but a renowned jazz saxophonist, and then Bobby Keys, who played for the Stones, and to bring things full circle, Branford Marsalis, the Marsalis family, just revered in New Orleans, which is where this segment's guest resides, Jason Mingledorf. You never went with the stage name. You stayed with it, huh? You stayed with the family name.
I've had a few people tell me, you got to do something about this name. And but I kind of after a while, either people would come up with a nickname for me, once they heard it enough, it was hard to forget. It's memorable. And so I just, stuck with it. This band, whereas every band seems to have a different nickname, Papa Goes Funk was called Big Wind. We used to play every gig of ours was usually about 2.5 hours nonstop without a break. And as you could tell, it was loud and I blow hard. And actually I play that kind of intensity, is something that was really with that band was, I don't think I play as loud as I do with any other band than with Pop or Ghost Funk in terms of like that
You were powerful. I mean, you were, when he says blowing it hard, he is not kidding. I mean, I've seen a lot of musicians over the years, but that was, that put you right to the top as far as capabilities on that. I'm thinking, how does this guy, it's just straightforward. I mean, does your mouth ever? I mean, I saw you guys all sipping water, but I mean, how do you keep that longevity? Is that just from practicing so much?
Playing a lot. I tell my students that we have this thing called long tones, where you basically play notes for super long. It's kind of like our version of sit-ups, or push-ups, and doing that every day just to strengthen the muscles. It really is a physical. There's a physical aspect to playing the saxophone or any kind of wind instrument, especially brass instruments, but even the saxophone, it's a physical thing that you have to work at, and you have to do a little bit every day. So I find myself when I work with my students dealing with this kind of, this really literally physical aspect of it. And every day playing to build up the strength, that's definitely part of it. It's been a while since I played, with like I said, we hardly ever play, and it's so intense. One of my friends joked, he's like, Jason, you got to keep in shape, or you're going to be big. We're going to call you Big Winded. Big Wind.
I like that. That's true. I totally get. Well, and the other thing is, you didn't play in the high register, as officially known as altissimo, for those who know music, those who don't, in the higher register. So he's not doing a Junior Walker I know you've done some stuff with Maceo from James Brown's band and such, but I mean, he would get up there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get up there. I try to like to be kind of fluid going in and up and out of there. Some people like to scream, like super scream, but my favorite saxophone player is a guy from New Orleans called Lee Allen. A lot of people don't know his name, but he is, to me, is kind of the original rock and roll saxophone player. He played on all those Little Richard recordings and a lot of the Fast Domino, and he had this, and actually the Rolling Stones asked him to join them up for a little while. He played with them a little bit, but he never really did the screaming thing. He just had a huge sound, and so I've always kind of had that in my ear. Is kind of honking, raunchy.
Love that.
Peel the paint off the wall, kind of.
Yeah, that's thing. That's the true rhythm and blues, or the straight rock. I mean, when you talk about New Orleans, yeah. Other than Louis Armstrong, Fats Domino is the guy that you think of when it comes to.
He's the big a lot of people. Yeah, people when they move to New Orleans, musicians that move to New Orleans, they quickly realize that. I think some people come only knowing about traditional jazz or Dixieland. But the real successor to Louis Armstrong in New Orleans is Fats Domino, and all the people play. There's a whole, like, there's hundreds of songs that were like rhythm and blues songs from New Orleans that we play. They also play traditional jazz.
We're out of time. Get out there and practice your game, practice your horn, practice whatever you need to practice. Make sure you practice and take it to the next level. We will talk to you next week. Take care.
All right, this is Trey Cool from Green Day, and we're teeing it up with Keith Jones like we always do. It's a habit we can't stop.